The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, broadcasting live here. Another beautiful day on the Ed Stone campus, the first day of the month of June. Tomorrow morning, eight of us are going to be hitting the road early, heading over to Belgium for the weekend to enjoy the Pentecost Holy Day weekend with some brethren down there. And then in coming back, we're going to take a different ferry, not the one at Calais, but a different one. I forget, Cherbourg, I think it's called, in France, so that we can visit Normandy on Monday before catching the ferry late Monday night. So we've got some substitutes lined up for tomorrow and Monday. Richard Palmer and Brad McDonald will be filling in and giving you an exciting program, giving you perhaps a little bit of a different perspective on so many of these events, so many of these news events that have been happening, and in particular right here in Europe and right here in Britain. We've certainly witnessed a seismic shift, as I mentioned yesterday, in the transatlantic relationship between Europe and the United States, between Germany and the United States in particular. I mean, Britain, you look at what's happened just in the last year. Britain is now on the way out. We're coming up on, I guess, the one-year anniversary of the Brexit vote. Britain's on the way out of the European Union. The United States now has a president who's clearly less willing to intervene overseas than previous presidents. Of course, he had all the talk in the lead up to his election, President Trump did, of NATO being obsolete and the U.S. potentially withdrawing from the alliance. And then you have the trip last week, as we've been discussing at length over the last few days. European leaders, Angela Merkel in particular, now saying that the fate of Europe is in their own hands. Germany's going to have to step up and take the lead. I mean, they can no longer depend on Britain and the United States. And it's interesting, isn't it, to just look at what the commentators are saying. I mean, it's all over the place. They're trying to figure out what does this mean? What is happening here? Is this a watershed moment? There's a few. I played the clip for you yesterday from Charles Krauthammer talking about, do we really want Germany to be the strong nation to take over the reins in Europe? The last time that happened, remember, it didn't turn out so good. Well, you just read again some of the things that are coming in. It really does. There's some excellent commentary for sure, but there's not an awareness of what's coming. And we can be so grateful that we understand Bible prophecy. I'll get to that in a second here. This first headline, though, American interest. Trump's gifts to Merkel and Macron. It says, foreign policy is a funny thing. The results are often the opposite of what you want. Clearly, President Trump went to the two European summits, the NATO summit and the G7 one, intending to deliver a tough message, but the net result of his intervention has been to reduce American influence in Europe and to give both Merkel and Macron some lovely political gifts. I mean, that's the net result here. I mean, it really, in some ways, it undermines Britain, too. He brings that out in his piece. But here it reduces America's influence in Europe, and it just hands these gifts over to Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron, the leaders of this French-German axis. And so commentators now are trying to, again, figure out how that this changes things geopolitically. And we know, don't we? I read that quote to you yesterday from the old correspondence course from 1965. where it talked about Bible prophecy saying the German nation is going to unite with nine others, ten kings all together. And so Mr. Armstrong knew, Herbert Armstrong knew, that Germany would reunite. He said Germany would dominate. He said there would be 10 that would come together. In fact, he even talked about 5 coming from the west and 5 from the east. And so just with those predictions, those prophecies, he was telling you decades ahead of time that that Iron Curtain would come down. It now looks, this is from 1980, it now looks entirely feasible that Yugoslavia may be included in this revived Roman Empire. Also the Pope's native Poland and Romania and possibly Hungary. I mean, that was written 9 years before the Berlin Wall came down. How did he know that? How did he know? How did he know that these nations that were under the iron-fisted rule of Soviet communism, how did he know that they'd eventually swing over into this European Union? He knew because of Bible prophecy. That's how. This one from 1956. The Germans are coming back from the destruction of World War II in breathtaking manner. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. He said probably Germany will lead and dominate the coming United States of Europe. But Britain will be no part of it, he said in 1956. Imagine that, prophesying 60 years ahead of time about Brexit. That's what he did, 1956. It's incredible. Britain will not be part of it. Now, when you consider what he then said, too, about NATO, this transatlantic alliance, I mean, given how spot on he's been with all of these other prophecies regarding Europe and Britain, should we doubt what he had to say about the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, that alliance? In the plain truth of February 1981, he said the restored Roman system will radically change big power relations. NATO, as it presently exists, would be finished. That's what he said in 1981. I mean, NATO's been the alliance that's kept the peace. That kept Russia out, that kept Germany down, as the famous saying goes, and it kept America in. But he was telling you, Herbert Armstrong was, decades ago, that NATO would be finished. At least as it presently exists. Here's what we said, and he was right. This booklet that we put together years ago that just gives you the track record. All of the decades of forecasting, spot on. It says in that booklet, who would have thought that after the savagery of World War II, that America and Germany would be allies? They would become allies. Yet soon after the smoke from that massive conflict cleared, Washington and Bonn laid the foundation for close partnership. The United States established the Marshall Plan to rebuild Western Europe, especially Germany, and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization was launched, binding Europe and North America into a military alliance. It says here, biblical prophecy shows that this union was destined from the beginning to end in ruin. The fraying of the transatlantic relationship we see today is the advancement of this inevitable ruin. It's inevitable. This split, this breakup of NATO, it's prophesied. Revelation 17. Talks about the 10 coming together, the 10 in Europe, the 10 in that old territory where the Holy Roman Empire has been throughout the centuries. It's not a 10 nation or a group of 10 nations that spans across the Atlantic. It's not a transatlantic union. It's a European Union. It's a United States of Europe, headed up by Germany, with Britain on the outside, and America too. It says in Revelation 17, and there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. God began to open Herbert Armstrong's mind to this truth. Even as the sixth resurrection was on the scene back in the 1930s and 40s. Mr. Armstrong was right there. It's incredible when you read through Revelation 17 to just consider the detail. I was pointing this out yesterday with a video we recorded. The detail in these prophecies. Again, you go through the track record in that He Was Right booklet. And it's just one thing after another thing after another thing. Here's what's coming. Here's what's prophesied. Here's why. Here's why the United States is no longer going to be joined together with Europe. This is why NATO was destined to end in ruin. From the very beginning, it was destined to this. It says in verse 12 of Revelation 17, "And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings, 1 hour with the beast." Ten kings, or a United States of Europe. Same thing with the ten toes in Daniel 2. Ten heads of state, and they come together, these ten groups, for 1 hour with the beast. It's short-lived. We can be grateful for that. But given the kinds of weapons today, look at the damage that can be done in 2 or 3 years. Just in reading about Normandy and what those soldiers were going up against, storming those beaches. These German machine guns, I forget the name of the gun itself, but these were the most sophisticated machine guns in the world. I think they fired off something like 1,500 rounds in a minute. I mean, at that time, it was just a state-of-the-art, modern technology. And these were the guns that just mowed down the Allies as they landed on that beach or those beaches. That was in 1944. Look at the firepower today. Look at machine guns today. They're like little cap guns that so many of my friends played with when I was a boy. Just a little water pistol. That's about what it amounts to. 16,000 nuclear weapons spread over the earth. Jesus said, "Great tribulation is coming." And if God didn't intervene to stop it, well, we would wipe out the human race. But thank God He will intervene. That too is prophesied. That's something God has promised. That's also in these many prophecies that it's right here in Revelation 17, in fact. Verse 14, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Verse 13 says, "These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." And so that's why we watch Europe. That's why we watch Germany. That's why we look for these ten kings that are coming together. That's why it's significant when America's no longer bound to Europe, when American firepower no longer keeps Germany down. That just means that these prophecies accelerate. And we have to keep talking about it. We need to talk about it all week. That's what I've been doing, pretty much. What a moment this is. Going back to this American interest piece about the results, the net result of President Trump's visit to Italy and Brussels and across Europe last week. It says here, "With the U.S. and Britain now unreliable." Notice that, the U.S. and Britain. That's the way Europe sees the United States and Britain. Ephraim and Manasseh. Europe sees them as unreliable. This is paraphrasing Chancellor Merkel. She said, "Europe must now take more care of itself." I played you these sound bites yesterday. This is the American interest says this is a winning message in Germany. Unease about the United States is always a factor in German politics. And Trump makes George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan look popular in Germany. His unilateralism, his anti-German rhetoric, his open skepticism about climate change, all great on German sensibilities, from the far left to the far right. I mean, it's just across the board, pretty much. There's hardly a person in Germany who hasn't been both offended and annoyed by President Trump. Again, maybe this is overstating it somewhat. I don't know, but as we've been covering this week, I mean, he is impacting the world for sure. For better or worse, he's having an impact. And we've got to look at the way these events, trips like last week, we've got to look at the way they're impacting Germany and Europe, and then consider these prophecies. The American interest says if Trump had behaved more diplomatically in Brussels and Sicily, spouting bland platitudes about cooperation, hailing the depth of U.S.-German friendship, and praising Angela Merkel for her leadership, she would now be trying to figure out how to distance herself from an unwelcome and politically damaging embrace. But as it is, she can criticize Trump, distance her administration and her party from an unpopular U.S. president, and do it all while professing undying loyalty to the highest values of the Western alliance. See, Germany's the good guy. Germany's the good guy. The American interest says here, this is a wonderful break for her. Traditionally, in German politics, the center-right coalition has stood for closer cooperation with the United States. See, that's been the tradition. Her party, I mean, they reach out to the United States. They strengthen that bond between the United States and Europe. But now we see it breaking apart. And this just gives Germany the perfect excuse to break free and go it alone. To break free and take charge in Europe. Economically, politically, militarily. It's already happening, as I said yesterday. The plans are in motion, and now they're moving faster. It says, meanwhile, the sense of unease that many Germans will feel as unpredictable changes rock the political landscape also redounds to Merkel's advantage. Well, this suggests that she's in a pretty good position, with elections coming up in September. And they think that she's a shoo-in. So many people do. So many commentators do. And maybe she will be reelected. But look at how much has changed in a matter of months, in a matter of weeks, even days now. What will happen between now and September? I mean, for one, for sure we know that more crises are on the way. We know this. Again, look at what's happening already, just in the last couple of years with the refugee crisis. And now this. This is a little bit further on, but helpful as Trump's visit was to the German conservative, he may have done a bigger favor for the upstart Frenchman. I mean, it really does, again, hand a gift over to Emmanuel Macron as well. His position is strengthened. And now, of course, there's more talks between Germany and France saying, look, we have got to come together. And this article says that the French leader now can have a strong, I mean, the things that typically divide or prevent Germany and France from coming closer together, they may now be able to get past that. Because they need that Franco-German axis. They need it. They need to come together if they're not going to have the United States and Britain. If the U.S. and Britain are unreliable, Germany needs France. And France needs Germany. And Germany now might be willing to accept some concessions or make some concessions. It says the revival of French influence in the EU won't be good news for Britain It's unfortunately likely that part of the French price will be a somewhat more protectionist tone in the Brexit negotiations. But overall, the slow withering away of the vitality of the Eurozone and the sapping of the strength of the EU in the last 10 years has been a disaster for the West and for world order. A rebalancing EU may be less open and less Atlanticist than most American foreign policy experts might prefer, but the development of a united Europe has been a core American interest since the 1940s and remains one today. I mean, I read that quote to you yesterday from Mr. Armstrong. It's an American idea. It's America. America's propped it up. America's empowered it. And now America's ready to move on. Listen to this conclusion. Trump did not go to Europe planning to punish Britain, reward Germany, and promote France. Nor did he intend to revitalize the European project. But that may be exactly what he ended up doing. It says, interesting times ahead. Indeed. Indeed. That's about all that they can conclude, even when there's some pretty good points brought out in these pieces that we quote from. They don't know where this is headed. You get the occasional warning, like from Charles Krauthammer, as I played yesterday. But for the most part, I mean, they know, so many of them know that these are major shifts. These are epical shifts. These are seismic shifts. But where will it lead? That's the question. And well, God will answer if people would look to him. There was a story in the New York Times today, page 6, A6 of the print edition. China sees an opening in the rift between Trump and Germany. I saw another one in Reuters just before coming down here. As the U.S. retreats, EU and China seek climate leadership at summit. China, of all people, now taking the lead on the climate. China, this massive nation that produces so much pollution. But now you see China coming together with Europe. The New York Times says here it sees an opening. Well, I read that from the title. It says, in a geopolitical world this week, the new American president had barely left Europe to face his Russia troubles at home before Chancellor Angela Merkel, the continent's number one leader, suggested that Mr. Trump's America was no longer a reliably close ally. And then it just talks about all of the meetings that that Germany or Chancellor Merkel has had this week. I mean, following President Trump's visit. And then those strong statements that she made to German voters on Sunday. We've got to go it alone. And this week she's met with this large delegation from India. She talked about that Indian delegation as being a reliable partner. And then now these meetings with China, this New York Times piece quotes from a columnist at Der Spiegel, which says that Trump's turn away from America's classic leading role is having a destabilizing effect. I mean, in other words, the global order, it's being shuffled, it's being restructured. It says here, but the Chinese view, the Chinese view Mr. Trump's harsh behavior in Europe as a gift to be capitalized on. So it's a gift. I mean, he went in on this trip thinking, okay, we've got to accomplish this, 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 and this. But look, he's handing gifts to Germany, France, and now, as this article brings out, China as well. China sees the rift. China sees the division. And China's swooping in to take advantage of it. It's a gift to be capitalized on. Notice this. It helps Beijing carry through on a long-term vision of China and the European Union joining together as a geostrategic balance against the United States. Now, where have you heard this before? We've been talking about this for well over a year, but especially with the emergence of candidate Trump last year. and some of the things that he was saying out on the campaign trail about trade. Here's the New York Times saying China sees this as an opportunity to capitalize on. Their long-term vision, well, that China comes together with the European Union as a geostrategic balance against the United States. See, that's the thing about all these other nations that President Trump is railing against. They have their own interests. They have their own aims and ambitions. And if things are restructured and reshuffled, then they're going to go looking for other players. They're going to go looking for other partners. This article quotes from one professor in Hong Kong. This is that same New York Times piece. I think Europe in general, and Germany specifically, are collectively experiencing a paradigm shift in their perceptions of U.S.-Europe relations. It's a paradigm shift. It's all prophesied. I mean, it was inevitable that the NATO alliance would not last, because there is to be a seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. That's prophesied, and so that's how we know where this is leading with respect to China, and then coming together with the European Union and this new geostrategic balance that's formed to oppose the United States. Well, that too is something, as I say, we've been talking about a lot over the last year. My father's feature from about a year ago, China is steering the world toward war. And in that important article, my father talks about America and Britain being besieged in the gates. It says, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates until your high and fenced walls come down." God's punishing our peoples. He's punishing our nations. My father said in that article from last summer, this was the July trumpet, you can already see this prophecy, that one in Deuteronomy 28, moving toward its fulfillment. The European Union is moving into South America, making trade agreements that are taking business away from the United States. Russia and China are militarizing the most important trade routes traversing the Asian continent. He says this prophecy is being fulfilled before our eyes. America's enemies are securing shipping lanes and creating economic alliances that will soon enable them to choke off America's supply lines. And so a massive trade war is coming. You can look on your own time at Ezekiel 4. Well, Ezekiel 4 and 5. About the coming great tribulation, the one that Jesus prophesied. Matthew 24, 21, and 22, the worst ever. Nothing like it, so many prophecies say. A time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. That's how Daniel put it. Jesus prophesied of it. Here are the two testaments. I mean, they perfectly complement each other. Jesus said, unless those days are shortened, there would be no flesh saved alive. Well, regarding that tribulation period in the past, I mean, this is going back before a couple of years ago, but we've thought that the tribulation would begin with the military attack on Manasseh, Ephraim, and Little Judah in the Middle East. But what that prophecy in Ezekiel 4 is describing is a tribulation, or a period of that tribulation, the first part of it that begins with an economic siege against our nations, a siege against the house of Israel, as it says in Ezekiel 4. My father wrote last summer, it's a prophecy that one-third of these nations will be destroyed economically and socially by a siege. Economic cataclysm. That's what's prophesied. And then my father made this statement. This is the one we've repeated so often. He said the United States and Britain are going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocks, Europe and Asia. Europe and Asia, did you get that? As they mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce, These nations of Israel are going to be literally besieged, economically frozen out of world trade. So Mr. Trump leaves last Saturday. Angela Merkel gives her fiery speech on Sunday. And then the big time meetings with these massive Asian nations, India, China. Look at how fast these events are unfolding. Well, thankfully, there is a solution to this mess, to these problems that are mounting. And you can find it in that same prophecy in Matthew 24, where Jesus talked about great tribulation. It all leads up to the return of Christ, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. That's where this is leading. It's the same with that prophecy in Revelation 17, as I said, verse 14. Verse 14 brings it out. Verse 12, remember, says the 10 kings, and then they have one mind, verse 13, and then verse 14. It says, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Jesus himself returns to this earth to crush this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire and to set up and establish God's kingdom on earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. The Trumpet Daily.
My father makes the point in his new booklet, Great Again, that America's problems, and you can say the same for Britain, the problems are a direct result of our sins. And as he goes on to say in that text, no one man, no political party is going to be able to make America great again. It doesn't matter what we might think. God's trying to get us to look to ourselves or look at what we're doing. Look at what we're bringing upon ourselves. He's trying to get us to look at our sins. That's what's the root cause of the problems that we're facing. Senator Ben Sasse, there in the States, he recently wrote a book titled "The Vanishing American Adult," and I haven't read the book, only excerpts of it, and I've read a few columns that review the book, but it looks like it's a pretty solid book in many ways. This is one bit from it. He says, Senator Sasse says, I believe our entire nation is in the midst of a collective coming-of-age crisis without parallel in our history. I mean, it's never been like this. I read those scriptures in the first segment about the tribulation coming upon our nations, and this world's never seen anything like it. But before that gets here, look at what we're doing to ourselves already. He's right about that. I mean, it's without parallel. We are living in an America of perpetual adolescence, he says. Our kids simply don't know what an adult is anymore or how to become one. Many don't see a reason to even try. Perhaps more problematic, the older generations have forgotten that we need to plan to teach them. It's our fault more than it is theirs. See, he's right about that as well. Who's to blame? Who's to blame? I mean, why are there so few who are actually adults in the way that they think and reason? Parents are the most responsible teachers, or the teachers most responsible for teaching their children, for providing children with a Bible-based education. You can see that in the book of Deuteronomy and elsewhere in the Bible. Look at Timothy, the example of Timothy. In 2 Timothy, where Paul said, look, your grandmother's taught you, your mom taught you. That's why Timothy turned out the way that he did. He received a solid education, a Bible-based education. The Bible doesn't contain all knowledge, of course, but it's the foundation. That's what the Word of God is. That's the foundation of all knowledge. And yet try to get people interested in this. It's difficult. It's easier to capture their attention with prophecy and prophecies being fulfilled. Last weekend, by the way, on the Key of David, you can see this program on the website. Wisdom is the principal thing. We talked about some of this a couple of weeks ago on the radio here. But that particular video brought in just 110 requests for 7 laws of success and education with vision. And I think Andrew Locher at headquarters would tell you that there's a similar downturn in overall requests when you get into anything having to do with education, with anything having to do with just learning the truth of the Bible, just learning God's ways and teaching it even. I mean, going beyond just gathering it for ourselves, but actually having the Ephesians 3:9 mindset of wanting to give it to others. Starting firstly, of course, with our own children. What does the prophet say in Hosea 4? He said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you. And you shall be no priest to me. You're not going to be my teachers if you reject this knowledge. God says, seeing you have forgotten the law of God, I will also forget your children. God says we're going to be destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Our children will be forgotten. I mean, that's the way it's been. This is the sin cycle. You see it in ancient Israel, and you see it playing out again today. Maybe it goes along pretty good for a generation or two, but then after that, the oncoming generations turn lukewarm. We've seen it happen in spiritual Israel. And then they slide into immorality. And eventually the whole nation, all of the people go into captivity. That cycle is replaying itself. It's happening again. It's interesting to just, again, to think about this Normandy trip, to see those beaches that, what would they be? An 18-year-old back in 1944, I guess he'd be close to 90 now. There's not that many of them left. We're really hoping that we see a few on Monday. But there's not that many left. They're dying off. And where do you see that same level of sacrifice and service among young people today? Sass got the idea for his book while he was working at a university and just seeing the young people that couldn't do the simplest of tasks. They couldn't follow through all the way through to the end. He gave one example where, you know, just giving them the assignment of decorating a Christmas tree, how so many of them would just decorate the bottom of the tree because they couldn't be bothered with trying to figure out how to get a ladder and just anything that would inconvenience them in the slightest. Oh, never mind. Just do the bare minimum. Sass writes, this day's failure wasn't all about lacking brains. It was about will. It was about ownership. It was about not having much experience or interest in seeing tasks through to completion. Big problems. I mean, and this is a book, by the way, that, you know, the New York Times and some of the left-wing newspapers would just ridicule. Oh, how naive for him to think that if, you know, we just taught a hard work ethic, that would turn everything around. Well, in one sense, the problems are greater. They certainly are. But this is where we are when the leading newspapers just immediately dismiss it and say, well, how silly. You know, how it's too simplistic. It's so naive. I mean, we're in a very sophisticated and modern society, don't you know? Sass, and speaking of some of his friends who are concerned about the oncoming generation, he writes, they've noticed that all of this screen time seems to imbue their kids with a zombie-like passivity. They detect a decline of agency, of initiative, of liveliness. And then he goes on to talk about the decline of education. Parents are to blame, as he said. He talks about the educational system. He talks about kicking God out of schools, prayer, and so on, and how that our young people are growing up without any purpose, without any awareness of what this life is all about. It's interesting, just, well, when you talk about education, I mentioned the disappointing results or requests coming in for 7 Laws of Success, Education with Vision. Another one's a missing dimension in sex. I mean, we could offer that on TV, and that would probably generate a low number of requests. Well, I mean, you read that book, by the way, and that book is about education. It's about more than just sex. It's about more than just marriage, even. There's so much in there, in fact, about the God family vision. Why marriage? Why sex? Why did God create it? But then also, particularly in the early chapters, I've been reading it with my teenagers. You look at the early chapters of that book, and it's really about the missing dimension in education. Revelation from God. God's truth. I mean, that's the foundation, as I say. That's the foundational building block. Study it. If you haven't read it in a while, look into that book and be educated and receive the knowledge of God. Look, I mean, Hosea said it, not me. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. This is serious, in other words. God is saying, we've got to look at ourselves. We've got to see where we're falling short. We've got to see what changes we need to make. And we've got to look into what we can do to raise our children the right way, to strengthen our marriages, to build our families. That's the basic fundamental building block of any society. And because that's breaking down, well, is it any surprise that the society around us is breaking down? Emma Green at The Atlantic, she wrote about Ben Sasse's book, The Vanishing American Adult. And she focused more on the disappearance of virtue from American politics. You see it. You see childishness in politics today. I mean, just look back at 2016. Look back at last year. Look at those campaigns. And look at even what Hillary Clinton is carrying on with as recently as yesterday. Still a sore loser. Still feeling like she's been robbed or cheated. Going on and on about Trump's in cahoots with the Russians. There's this big conspiracy. And here we are, months after the fact, a half of a year later. Childishness on both sides. It's just like Isaiah 3 prophesied. There's another prophecy. Children ruling over us. The Vanishing American Adult. This Emma Green, she quotes, again, from Sass's book, saying, Sass believes Americans have lost their sense of personal integrity and discipline. People must recover their sense of virtue. The Republic depends on it. I mean, our future is dependent on this sense of virtue, on these qualities of integrity and discipline. It says here, The Vanishing American Adult is written as a reflection on the purpose and nature of education, which Sass argues should extend beyond schooling and classrooms. Everywhere I go across the country, I hear from people who share an ominous sense that something's very wrong with our kids, he writes. We've lost something from our older ways of a coming of age. Instead of relying on institutionalized school-centric childhood, Sass says, families should develop practices that will prepare their kids to become fully formed, vivacious, appealing, resilient, self-reliant, problem-solving souls who see themselves as called to love and serve their neighbors. I mean, forget about sacrificing everything to storm the beaches at Normandy. I mean, just to serve your neighbor. That's the principle of God's law of love. Love toward God first and love toward fellow man. It really is the solution to all the problems of this world. Sass's proposed cultivation program is a cross between boot camp and a great book seminar in a chapter called Embrace Work Pain. Well, it just kind of summarizes some of the content in his book. He's obviously saying the work ethic needs to be stepped up. He's saying that we need to focus in on the great works of history, the great textbooks, the great books, and study them. And study them. It quotes him as saying, it's very difficult for a rich republic to remain virtuous. I mean, we have all of these riches. Truthfully, I mean, we're living like kings. We're living like royalty. Just those of us in the middle class, given the things that we have. You compare it to someone living in some medieval time, even royalty, going back centuries. With all of the modern conveniences that we have at our fingertips, all of the things in life that make life easy and smooth, it's very difficult for a rich republic to remain virtuous. We have all of the luxuries, but we have lost the virtues. We certainly have. It says, finally, citizens who take little interest in books, well, that's the other point about work ethic, reading and study. It says, finally, and this is quoting Sass, Americans are drifting, they are a drifting and aimless people, awash in material goods, and yet spiritually aching for meaning. He's spot on with that, for sure. I mean, that's coming from a man that doesn't even fully understand God's purpose and plan that's being worked out here below. And yet he can look at society and see that something's dreadfully wrong. He can look at young people and see what has happened. We have a feature in our latest Trumpet by Andrew Miller, Why Moral Decline Matters. And that article, by the way, it's paired with my father's on the website and also in the Trumpet magazine. My father's personal about Melanie Phillips' book, Guardian Angel. I went through some of that material a couple weeks ago. But in Andrew Miller's piece, Why Moral Decline Matters, he says the longest standing and most consistent forecast the Trumpet has made since Volume 1, Issue 2, in June 1990, has been that America and Britain will fall and that the fundamental cause will not be birth rates, weather phenomena, superbug epidemics, gross domestic product, or carrier strike groups. Fundamentally, it will be because of failed morals, And so we come back to what the Bible prophesies. Bible prophecy. It's all laid out there for us. God told us this would happen. God told them in ancient Israel. Okay, here's what's going to happen. But notice what happens. When you go and read through Daniel 8, I believe it is. You're going to get into the riches and the wealth of the promised land. And then you're going to become fat in more ways than one. You're going to become satisfied. And it's going to be very difficult for a nation in those prosperous circumstances to remain virtuous. It really is. And so learn the lesson of history. Andrew goes through quite a bit of that in his article. Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. He quotes from Edmund Burke. Of course, the founding fathers, George Washington, who said that religion and morality are the indispensable supports of a blessed society, of prosperity. The national morality, John Adams says, that has to be laid in the private families of the nation. Those are the building blocks. Well, speaking of prophecy, look on your own time, and Andrew goes through this in his piece, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and cursings. God says if we obey, we're blessed. If we obey those laws, if we do them. So you're learning, you're being educated, you're receiving the truth, and then you're applying them in your lives. And then blessings come. Before the disobedient, God says, I'll set my face against you. I mean, we'll be in opposition to the great God of this universe. Let me read to you what it says in an old Plain Truth magazine. This is from 1976. Herbert Armstrong in an article. And he's talking here about the nation of America, the blessings that we had received from God, and how that God promised to, well, we received the blessings from the beginning because of Abraham's obedience. And so God just brought us into this land, Ephraim and Manasseh, and just blessed us with all of this prosperity and wealth and power. But then as the United States and Britain in prophecy brings out, I mean, it was up to us to retain those blessings through obedience to God's laws. Have we done that? Mr. Armstrong said in 1976, we have polluted our minds and those of our children. I mean, this is long before Ben Sasse ever came along. And again, nothing against him. Good for him. Sounds like an excellent book. But this is Herbert Armstrong writing in 1976. We have polluted our own minds and those of our children, teaching the anti-God fable of evolution. We've given public acceptance to the misnamed new morality, which is gross immorality. We have given public acceptance to homosexuality, premarital sex, and perversion. We have polluted the sacred institution of marriage, and through a constantly increasing divorce rate, we have started on a course of destroying the home and family relationship, the foundation of any stable society. You see, marriage and family, the traditional family unit, I mean, that's the foundation. That's the foundation. You start destroying that, there's nothing left for the society to stand on. There's nothing left. And so you think about then all these other prophecies, Hosea 4, as I mentioned, Isaiah 3. Isaiah 3 talks about the family being upside down, and it says there in that same prophecy that we declare our sin as Sodom. I mean, we're proud of our sins. We're out there putting them on display. All of the, to go back to Hosea, all of the swearing and the lying and the killing and stealing, the adultery, the violence. We're putting out there on display. Our sins, as I've said here recently, testify against us. That's Isaiah 59. And so returning back to Great Again, that new booklet by my father, he said early on in the book, America's problems are a direct result of America's sins. No political candidate is going to make America great again, no matter what people think. My father says, I'd like to see it happen, but it's not going to happen in this age. And then he says this, everyone will come to recognize that truth before much longer. God will make America great again in the world tomorrow. See, God has to do it. God knows how to do it. It takes the government of God. It takes the family of God. That's the foundation. That's coming. As I said, I mean, that's what all of these dreadful and terrifying prophecies, that's what they all lead to. Revelation 17, 14 and Matthew 24, verse 30, the return of Christ and the establishment of God's kingdom, God's family government on earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As we put the finishing touches on yet another program, I'll be off tomorrow and Monday, as I say. You'll have some wonderful subs sitting in, and we'll look forward to being back with you on Tuesday. We'll see you then.